Welcome to the podcast. Today, Bill O'Reilly is here to react to all of the news from the week, including the Flynn investigation, as well as the latest developments in the economy and in politics. We get the unemployment rate right before the show, and 14.7%. We'll go into the details on that. What does it mean in perspective? We'll get into all of the details on that, as well as the salon owner here in Texas who was able to get released from prison yesterday, or released from jail yesterday, thanks to big efforts from activists like you, if you happen to be one, and also the governor of the state. We'll get into that as well. Go to blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn. Get $30 off. I think they're entering this deal next week, so if you want to get that, you got to act now. And here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Oh, man. Okay. All right, it's not exactly good news. Just in the first 2 weeks of April now, we have just the first 2 weeks in April rolling into this average. This is not the whole month. This is the first time we're getting a look at the unemployment number since we started the lockdown. So in 2 weeks, how long have we been going now? Almost 8 weeks, Stu?
Yeah, I guess we're coming up on this is the end, because the six weeks to stop the spread ended last week. So this would be the end of the seventh week.
All right. So we only have two of those 7 weeks and it's still getting worse.
I think we actually
our unemployment rate.
Yeah, we're further along than that. I think we'd have four because it was.
Do we really? That makes me feel better.
The last 2 weeks of March and the first 2 weeks of April, I believe, are here. So we still are missing the last couple of weeks, which we've seen multiple millions more go on the unemployment rolls.
Yeah.
But yes, sorry. Go ahead.
So we have lost 20 million jobs. 20.8 million jobs have been lost. And our unemployment number has gone from the best it's ever been. What was it? 3.5 or 3.8?
3.5. Yep. It's not the best it's ever been, but it's best it's ever been in a very long time.
The worst, we have seen in quite some time. We're at now 14.6. I don't have it in front of
14.7.
14.8. 14.6. 14.7.
Everything but the 14.7.
So it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
14.7.
The worst, clearly the worst it's been in a very, very, the worst it's...
Since the Depression.
Since the Depression, for sure. And, you know, when they talk about speed, here is another issue. The worst in the Great Recession for 1 month was a loss of 800,000 jobs. The worst of all time, record of all time, was September 1945. And that was a loss of 2 million. We lost 20.
Wait. Let me put this into perspective.
Sure.
That last one that was so bad was actually very good because we were laying people off because we could stop making tanks.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And when we stopped making tanks and ships and airplanes, all right, we were manufacturing an entire war machine for the world. And that month, when the war was over, we only lost 2 million jobs. This, in a month, we have lost 20 million, 10 times the amount.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't stopped fighting a war. And there is no, 1950 Chevy on the horizon that's going to come quickly. It's not like, oh, we just have to retool. Hey, everybody's coming home. Let's build houses.
Right. Uh-uh. Yeah, I mean,
this one's really bad.
You do have some of these jobs that hopefully snap back. I mean, I'll tell you, I went out. I only went out for four meals last weekend. Because I thought
you were crazy.
Four different times. The second time we went out, I mean, we were desperate here. The second time we went out, we talked to a guy who worked at a restaurant, and the restaurant was, in the middle. Picture this really nice restaurant, relatively new, last year or two, built in between three hotels. not a lot of people at the hotels these days. That's a kind of an issue.
Yeah,
so even when you open, who's going to your restaurant? So there's basically nobody at this place. We're talking to the guy for a long time, and it was the first day Texas had allowed restaurants to be open. And he said, you know, immediately when this happened, he got laid off. And he was waiting, you know, just like so many Americans, with the intent, though, the belief that eventually he was going back to the same job. And that is what happened. He is now back at the place. And again, that's not going to be the case for everybody. But some of those jobs, as these things reopen, will snap back. It's just a matter of how many. And again, they're running at 25% capacity, which they were not hitting.
The jobs that will snap back that are pretty easy are anything to do. Well, for instance, Mexico is now having a beer shortage, okay, because beer was not essential. So those jobs are coming back. I mean, if you're in the alcohol industry, you might see a boom. Those jobs are coming back.
Specifically, I'd be a little nervous
maybe.
About.
Yeah. I wonder if they change their name in the end. I doubt they do. I mean, but it did affect them. They really did think that I'm not drinking Corona beer, which is stupid. It doesn't come from Corona beer. But anyway, the jobs that you have that are entertainment based. I talked to Michael Cole. You know who Michael Cole is, Stu? Michael Cole. He's a big concert promoter and producer.
Okay.
He did the Rolling Stones. He does, you know, all the big names. He wrote to me last night and I said, how long before you're back to work? He said, I think it's going to be 18 months before any industry of entertainment's really coming back.
Jeez.
And that's with my fingers crossed. I mean, that job is. And I think restaurants are going to be in this. I think people are anxious to go out to restaurants, but just not crowded restaurants. So restaurants will be open and they'll be doing it. But I think people are not going to be standing in line. You know, the Cheesecake Factory where it's just jam packed and you're all standing in line to get in. Those kinds of restaurants, I think, are going to be a little more difficult to snap back. So I don't know how restaurants are going to make enough money to make a real profit, but maybe they could keep their businesses open. The ones who are really in trouble, if you worked for a small business, I have friends, they wrote last night and said they are opening up their bookstore. And they said, you know, they've got this little bookstore in Indiana, and they're just great people. And they said, we opened it up, and the first day, all of our friends came in and bought a book, and all of our, you know, loyal customers, they all bought a book. They said, but it has been ghost town since then. But they're hoping for travel because they're in this cute little, you know, vacation kind of spot. And they said they make most of their money in the summer. Now, I think travel is, I think travel's going to snap back, but it's going to be the old way, I think. I don't think people are going to get into an airplane right away. I think they're going to be driving a lot. I know we're planning on going on vacation, and we're planning on driving across. And not for any other reason other than I just like driving. But I hate airports, but there's no reason to get into an airplane if you can drive right now.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be. Did you see Frontier is offering seats for as low as $35? If you want to buy the seat next to you.
Oh, really? You just sit to add on essentially
$35.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you don't want to sit next to somebody, it's $35.
That's smart.
Holy cow.
That's a smart way of handling it, though.
Very smart.
You know, we saw some pictures yesterday of planes that are still packed as the old days, you know, like, I mean, middle seats all filled. A lot of them are going very empty, but occasionally those things still happen, which is just at this point so strange. You know, but I think that there's that, I don't know if I told you the story, Glenn. I was, you know, looking at the flight for the upcoming Super Bowl, which I, you know, book well in advance to try to get nosebleed prices. And I thought this time, like, I can really get hooked up. I mean, this is going to be like $12 to go to Tampa in February,
right,
if this game even occurs, which they did announce the schedule last night, and they're supposedly keeping it on schedule for the moment. Something happened that I've literally never seen in my entire life. I doubt anybody in this audience has ever seen it. Maybe if you're a frequent business traveler, you've seen it. Never seen it before. the first class ticket was less expensive than the coach ticket. I have no explanation as to why that occurred. You know, maybe it was a computer error, or maybe just people are just not buying that type of seat at all. But I was like, eh, first class of the Super Bowl. Screw that. I'm doing it.
Well, wow. And the good thing that's not going to last.
No, I know. It's
you
not.
Know, if you're smart, well, if you're risky, you could. I wonder if you could buy a bunch of those first class seats and then resell them when things go normally and everybody's trying to get to the Super Bowl. You've got a whole bunch of first class seats that you could charge nosebleed prices for.
StubHub for airline tickets. I don't know if that
exactly
exists,
right.
But
yes.
I like it. I'm going to go for it.
Yes,
it's a good idea.
I mean, why not? I mean, is it illegal to do that?
I don't think you can do it because of all the security stuff of buying.
Oh, because
seats.
Of security. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
It's a great idea, though. I like the way you're working the system.
Damn Al Qaeda. I could have been a rich man. I could have been somebody.
They will, by the way, give you an opportunity. You can change flights right now. Again, I don't know if anybody else is in this world. I always think of these situations and try to figure out ways to, what's the best, is there any way to take advantage of this situation in some long-term thing that like no one's thinking of? And I was like, flights, it would be interesting. If you go on and you book a flight right now, at least I know it's American and I think a bunch of other airlines, until May 31st, you can change it. You can change any of the times for no cost. So you have to look at, obviously, all the details and, you know, your airline, your area. But I thought that was interesting in that, like, if you're planning a vacation, you're like, I don't know, is it going to happen in August? It might be worth just booking the flights.
Wow.
And you can always change them later. The prices are cheap. And you can always go on and change, the actual timing of it if this stuff doesn't wind up panning out.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to last very long because I will tell you, I live in a place where I can see the flight pattern into Dallas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The planes, you know, all stack up. And so at night, it's kind of cool to watch all these planes, these lights in the sky. You're like, they're UFOs, man. They're all UFOs. They're all lining up and you can see them kind of coming in for the flight pattern. And we have noticed that the skies have been a little dark lately here in Dallas, but it is picking back up, or starting to see the flight pattern start to pick up again, which is encouraging.
Yeah, you're seeing
encouraging.
This.
By the way, I just want to say tonight at on Blaze TV for subscribers only, a UFO show. Yes.
Oh,
I'm going into this is going to be great. Mm. I'm going into all of the latest releases of the UFO. Two guys who actually worked for the government in that program, studying the UFOs, going to be with us tonight.
That's a good. I like that. That's a fun distraction right there.
It's going to be good.
I need to have that.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be good. Yeah.
Quickly, I was just going to say that we're seeing the data on mobility, which is one of these things that's popped out of this crisis, and that you realize they really do have access to a lot of your data and your movements. But a lot of these services are like putting out these mobility numbers, which is showing how much people are moving. And you see, first of all, you see before the government got involved at all, the mobility, people going to various places, dropping, you know, like a stone in water, right? Like, I mean, it's just going, it has nothing to do with the government. People, this argument has been so much about the government policy, which is obviously important at some level. But generally speaking, all of these things were happening, whether the government said that we could do them or not. They all said, you know, like all this movement happened long before any government bans. People stopped going to restaurants. People stopped going on these trips. They were doing it on their own because they were scared for their lives. Right. And the same thing is happening now. Before the government is releasing these things, you know, saying, oh, guys, you guys can go outside again. People are just starting to go back outside now. They've taken their time. They understand now the risk. They've been able to internalize it. They realize that we've been able to build up some of the stockpiles, and God forbid something mm-hmm. happens. And that was what this was pitched at, and I think was the appropriate understanding right. of what the situation was. Now we're at the end of that. People are leaving whether they want it or not. The government policy doesn't seem to have much of a factor at all in what people are really doing.
No. Did you hear about Mark Cuban? This is creepy, I think. Mark Cuban did secret shoppers here in Dallas, and he hired a bunch of people to go out and see what people were doing. He said places were crowded that they went into, and he'd like to report that those businesses were not really living by all the standards. Mark, what are you doing, man? Shut up. What are you, like a rich snitch? What is that? Stop it. But he said that there are more people out and they're just kind of getting back to normal in all ways, which I think is good.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly, a man who will not speculate on the extraterrestrial problem. Welcome to it, Bill. How are you?
I have a boarder at my house who's from Venus.
Do you? Really? Illegal, yeah. Or are they here legally?
The problem is the rent. He's doing PayPal, but I can't take Venetian currency.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, that sucks. That sucks. All right. So, let's.
I mean, I can bring him in.
No, I think we're all booked up. Bill, let's talk about Michael Flynn and what's happening there and what the DOJ has come out with. Can you give us any understanding of this and perspective?
Of course, I can, Beck. I'm a simple man, as you know, and I look at this not from a journalistic point of view, but from an American point of view. You have the most powerful investigative agency in the world, the FBI. It is now clear beyond any reasonable doubt that the ownership of the FBI, the people who ran it, and their top agents knew that an investigation into a presidential candidate and then a president was founded on no evidence whatsoever, none. So the FBI continued to try to find evidence based on no probable cause. So in order to investigate a citizen, you got to have probable cause. You just can't,
correct.
Police just can't walk in your house and say, look, we don't know if you did anything, but we're going to search the house. You
right.
can't do that. That's unconstitutional. That's what the FBI did.
Hang on there, because I have a question about this so far. So far, I understand it, and that's exactly what Barr was saying. They had they knew they didn't have a case. They knew they had nothing. So that's like what getting them to lie is kind of like walking into the house, investigating for whatever, hoping to find something, and then saying, you know what? I hear he really hates his wife's cooking. When his wife is there, let's ask him, do you hate your wife's cooking? No, I love my wife's cooking. And he lies about that. You cannot go into somebody's house and just do that. But you also, even if he was lying, you can't get him on that because you didn't have a reason to be in the house in the first place.
In the first place. Absolutely.
Is that,
Beck, you're brilliant.
That's
you're brilliant
what's
guy.
Happening. Right. That's thank you. Yeah, well, I know.
You're a brilliant man.
I'm not a simple man. Yeah, thank
whatever
you.
Whatever he did, and the big question he has to pick up, Pence has to explain why Pence went to Trump and said he misled
him. He lied.
Yeah, Pence got to explain it. But anyway, getting back to the really important issue for every one of your listeners, you have a tremendous abuse of power and a crime because this prosecution was illegal. And you not only prosecuted General Flynn, but you tried to disrupt a presidential election in doing so. The only reason they went after Flynn, and everybody should be clear about this, is they wanted Flynn to flip on Trump. They wanted to put all this pressure on Flynn and his son, because his son worked with the general in their consulting firm, hoping that Flynn would say, well, Trump told me to do it, told me to talk to the Russians. That's the only reason they went after the man.
Let me ask you this question, because I agree with you that that is one of the reasons. I'm not sure it's the only reason. You know, Barack Obama, it's now been found out that he knew all about it and had an uncomfortable encounter. Inserting himself into some of this, and Obama was passionately anti-Flynn because he had Flynn as part of his council during his administration, fired him because he took such a hard line on Islamic extremists. And Obama warned Donald Trump, don't take him, don't take him, did everything he could to make sure that Flynn didn't come in and reverse a lot of the Obama era policies on you know, our fight on radicalized Islam. So is it, do you think that could have played a role, too, that he was not only trying to destroy Trump, but also if Trump won, he wanted to make sure that Flynn was destroyed?
I think that's speculation, Beck. I could not.
I think it's pretty good speculation.
Well, it's circumstantial evidence. But
yes.
I couldn't say that Barack Obama ordered the FBI to get Flynn. I could not say that. All right? Maybe.
Okay. All right.
Maybe. But that's not going to, believe me, that is not going to be in play. What's going to be in play is you've got to indict high-ranking members of the FBI. Durham has to bring back enough evidence so that Barr indicts. Now, I think that will happen. Because the outrage in this country would be so intense if the Trump Justice Department did not file charges against the top-level FBI people.
So we're Trump talking about Comey, McCabe. Right.
Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, and what's his name? Priesteps, who wrote that memo?
Yes.
Handwritten memo?
Yes.
Those are the five. But remember, I haven't seen what Durham, I don't know anything what Durham has. But you would think that from what we know, what's made public, those five people are in the kill zone. So say three of them get indicted. Say two of them get indicted. I think that would mollify the American people. But if no one gets indicted,
no,
Trump
be bad.
Will get hurt.
I don't want just somebody indicted for it. I want this fixed. I mean, I think that's where the American people are.
Well,
they don't want
fixed.
Some political show.
You can't get it fixed until there's convictions.
Oh, so no, I know that. But I'm saying, I think Clapper is another one that is involved deeply in this. There's evidence coming out now about Clapper. And what's the other one?
You've got to wait until Durham comes back with what Clapper did or did not do.
I know that. We're talking about...
Look, Clapper...
You are so funny.
No, I'm just brilliant, and you got to keep up with me.
Yeah.
Clapper, in a circumstantial case, you can convict him, but you can't convict him like you can the others, the FBI, because now we know, based on notes, handwritten notes in meetings, we know what they were trying to do. It isn't he said,
correct.
She said. There's the evidence. You see it. We haven't seen the evidence against Clapper or Brennan or any of the Obama
I know.
People. Go ahead.
You will. So
okay. So
let me ask you this. I agree with you. We have to have evidence, and we have to have strong evidence, because I want it clear. I don't want anyone to be able to say what Schiff is now saying, what's the little fat man Nadler is saying now. This is just revenge, and this isn't true, and Barr is out of control. We have to have real solid evidence. Otherwise, we turn into a banana republic.
Right, but I think that they do, because Barr is a very smart man. Of all of the Obama, of all the Trump cabinet members, all right, the two smartest, savviest are Barr and Pompeo.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the far and away the two smartest guys. Barr is telling you in his selective interviews, we're going to get these guys. And he wouldn't be doing it if he had a wishy-washy case. The other guy who's going to get it, I don't think he's going to be indicted, is Mueller. Because Mueller did not include in his report much of this stuff that he knew. Mueller knew. and left it out of his report. Now, I don't know if that's a federal crime. I don't think it is, but it's certainly corrupt. Is it not? Mueller was supposed to report on this whole thing, and he leaves out the FBI corruption, doesn't put it in.
We haven't even seen anyone pay yet for what happened with the FISA court, and somebody needs to pay for all of this.
Otherwise, I think it's nothing. That's where the indictments are going to come down. They're going to come down in phony warrants, all right, because that's a felony, and then abuse of power. That's a felony for the FBI. The FBI abused their power, all right, by contriving a case against a citizen. A general of all people. But obviously everybody knows the overarch is they tried to get Trump out of there. That's why they did all this.
And here's my concern.
It's as high as it gets.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right. You know, one thing that I have been thinking a lot about is schools and memories of our children of this COVID crisis. What's incredible to me is these parades that have been going on. I love these parades. Have you had one yet, Stu? Have you had somebody come by and do a parade for you?
Our daughter had her birthday parade. And just a few months late, out in front of our house the other day, and she loved it. In fact, my son is now saying he doesn't want a birthday party. He wants the birthday parade thing, which is pretty, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. My daughter had a birthday, and her parade happened, and it was really amazing to watch. And I wondered as I watched this, what that memory will be like, because we never had that memory, you know, and they'll be able. I remember the year that everybody was locked in and they had this parade. Well, the one thing that I've thought of from the beginning is all of these seniors and their graduations, seniors in college, seniors in schools all across the country. You know, you've gone for 12 years. And you don't get to stand up and have, you know, your name called. You don't have that typical graduation. Well, there is a principal in North Carolina. He's actually the 2018 North Carolina Principal of the Year. And his name is Tabari Wallace. And he decided to do something. Do we have him on yet? He's the principal of West Craven High School. Not to be confused with Wes Craven High School, which is completely different. You don't want to go to the boiler room in that one. It's a bad scene. It's a bad, bad scene. But anyway, West Craven High School. If we can't get him on, that's fine. He was supposed to be on. I guess he's not with us yet. But what he did is he sent out teams. He stood in full graduation regalia in the parking lot with a megaphone, coordinating all of the cars. The teachers were part of this parade, administrators, coaches, police officers, firefighters, community leaders. They were all set to go across the district. Now, they had 4 hours to cover 220 seniors. They broke up into 14 groups, each with a stack of personalized yard signs and a message, "You will graduate." And they did their own parade. 220 students, but 485 square miles is what they had to cover.
Wow.
And they did the graduation and stopped by all of these students. I just think this is really cool. Oh, he's on now. Great. I'm glad we can talk to him. His name is Tabari Wallace, and he's with us now. Hi, Tabari. How are you?
How you doing, Glenn? It's good to be on the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled with what you did. I think this is really a cool thing. Tell me about it.
Well, what we did was, you know, we do know what the plight of the class of 2020 is going through right now. And the least we can do as a school is to try to fill that void wherever possible. And we all know graduation and prom are two life events that all of us pretty much as adults still remember. So what we did, our county bought the signs and left it up to each individual principal on how to deploy the signs to the seniors. And what we decided to do, So because of the pandemic, our seniors couldn't come to us for graduation. Well, we'll take a pseudo graduation to their house. So we assembled and we called. I don't know if you read the story, but we service 480 square miles. And we have 13 different hubs or townships, communities up north. Y'all would call them boroughs. But we have 13 of those, and we split up. My staff of 80 joined, and we had municipalities from each of the service areas, fire department, police. We had our board of education members that represent the area. They were there. We had so many pile in. It was a community event to make sure that we go and surprise and service these seniors. And we all fanned out over that.
So they did.
Go ahead.
Did they have any idea this was coming? Did you do this all kind of quietly?
This is what I told them. I told them that we had a senior surprise for them that they would never forget. And I've got that relationship with my kids that I said, now, you know how Mr. Wallace do. So y'all need to be home between 8 and 2 o'clock. And the kids know in the past when I say that, it's some big celebration coming or somebody big is going to visit our campus. So I said, make sure that you're home between 8 and 2, and then make sure that you have your parents there, your extended family, and cameras ready. So the kids knew something was coming. They just didn't know what it was. And when we pulled up with the fire trucks and the police blaring and everything, and we played the graduation, we played Pomp and Circumstance over the loudspeaker, a lot of them ran back in and put their graduation garb on because they saw we were in full regalia. It was just a beautiful day, Glenn.
That is cool. That is really cool.
And, I mean, it was beautiful.
So that will be the graduation. You won't have a graduation later in the summer, right? That is the graduation?
Well, we did that just in case this pandemic, you know, the social distancing laws carry on through the summer. Our makeup date for graduation is going to be August 1. And if the social distancing laws haven't been relaxed by then, we have a second alternate date for December 19th, and we'll have to bring that inside. We've already consulted with the tourist center to make sure we can have it. But the sign served that when we presented it, each child was told an elevator speech. And we told them, we said, we want you to put this outside your house. And every time you walk in and out your house to go somewhere or whatnot, we want you to look at that sign and let this serve as a bridge. And this is going to be a bridge that your community, your administration, your teachers, we're going to get you across the traditional stage so you're not robbed of that moment in time in life that we will never forget. And that's why we did
that's cool.
Make sure they knew that. And then the kids get prom that afternoon. If we can have graduation, we're going to give them the prom as well. And they get to have a graduate in the morning, and then we got the prom that night at 7 o'clock. So it's going to be a busy day for the babies, but it's much deserved because we do not want this pandemic to rob them of these life experiences.
So let me ask you this, Tabari, because my kids are both in high school and they're not graduating, but they're still going, and they are really having a tough struggle with this virtual classes, just really struggling. And talking to the principals and everything at my kids' school, they're saying this is not unusual. How does because you're known for carpe diem, how are you getting kids to seize the day on this? I'm looking for some parental tips.
Okay, what you want to tell, you know, your child, and what I would tell all your listeners and the children across America right now, is that America cannot afford a 13 gap in learning. There's no way we can afford that in developing our future human capital. This is the workforce that is going to pretty much ensure our social security, Glenn. And so they need to understand that we, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you still believe in Social Security, but I get it. I get it.
But they have to keep working, because if your child is in Math 1 and they stop working and they are deprived of a 9 weeks worth or 13 weeks worth of work, they're not prepared to go into Math 2. And I can say that for English 1, 2, and 3, and English 4 is British Lit. Mm-hmm. If you haven't mastered the English vernacular, you will not be able to master when you get into British Lit and English 4, and that's a graduation requirement.
No.
So any student across, you have to keep working. I know that they're saying it's a PC-13, all you're going to get is a pass on your transcript and this and that, but it's not about that. This is one time that grades really doesn't matter. It is about the investment in our student capital. And that they do not have a gap in learning. That's why we have to keep encouraging our kids to keep working. And next year, it's going to be a little bit of that if these social distancing laws are not lifted. The NEAE president was just on TV earlier this week stating that we'll probably have a form of A Day, B Day. in regards to next year's learning. That means half of the kids will be in your building on Monday, and the other half will be home during digital learning. And then you switch on Tuesday. You see what I'm saying? So that's those are the ideas that are being kicked around right now. So we can have school in August if this great united space that we have, if the doctors, the engineers, and the scientists, if we don't figure this thing out and get that vaccine deployed and scaled by the time August 17th hit, then we're looking at that form of instruction, and it will not be the traditional instruction and traditional school that me and you went through.
Wow. Well, I hope we don't have to face that for many parents, many students, but also for the future of America, because it's not the same, or just jumping into something we've never tried before. And a lot of kids could be left behind, and the teachers really have their job cut out for them. This is the time to become heroic in figuring out new ways to teach and to keep kids engaged. And Tabari, right. Sounds like you're the guy who is doing that in your area. Congratulations on being the principal of the year in your entire state, North Carolina. It's good to talk to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Glenn. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. Tabari Wallace. You can see why he's popular, especially the kids. His joy kind of just jumped out on the first, you know, hey, how are you?
Yeah, he has the energy of someone you really like.
Yeah, he does.
Immediately.
He does. Unlike some of the principals I had at school. Oof.